There's Ruby. All right. So I see both of our speakers are here. Tiffany and Ruby. I heard of this organization that they run. I sit on a coalition of people trying to end civil commitment in New York. And at one of those meetings, somebody mentioned that there had been a hunger strike at MSOP. And I was like very intrigued. And so I looked it up on the internet and found out it was 5 years ago, but I had to hear all about it. We have had another person. Some of you may have been here when Thaisa Carvalho-Mick was here talking about her 5 months in the Larned facility in Kansas. So if any of you were here for that, I'd like to add to your knowledge. So I believe they come at it from different perspectives, but I just wanted to introduce them, and we're interested to hear what you have to say. Do I have to unmute them, or can they? Okay, I unmuted you both. No, wait. Now you're unmuted.
Thank you. Are we able to share a screen? We have like a
I
presentation.
think so. Let us make sure that that is the case. Doesn't it looks like I would be allowed to share, so hopefully you can also share. I'm not the like
I'll do it.
manager of this
Thank
Zoom.
you.
That's our Chuck. He does all the things.
So Tiffany Bold.
I can't do that right now.
There we go.
Okay. So yeah, me and Ruby are just gonna take you guys through our little presentation here. We are both part of the Titus nonprofit and co-founders of the End MSOP Coalition. Us and a bunch of others started the coalition just with having so many people committed there. And our approach in Minnesota is hopefully to sunset and reinvest the program. So we'll just get into it then. So with civil commitment in Minnesota, usually it's happening after prison. So the Department of Corrections will make a referral for civil commitment, usually after they've completed their prison time already. You can see on that top right graph that there was a huge spike in commitments after 2004 when there was a high profile case. And then that bottom chart shows per capita commitments by state, and you can see Minnesota is quite higher than any other state.
Oh, and
That's
Kansas is second. That is
still
really
holds true.
interesting. The other person we've had talk to us about it is Kansas, and Kansas sounds like it's number two, just right behind you. So that's awesome.
They consider it a treatment program. So that's how they get away with basically sentencing them after they serve their sentence. You can see in these two pictures here, one of these facilities is the prison, and the other one is this so-called treatment center. I think the treatment center looks a lot more like the prison than the prison does. So I mean they are like built like the same way, a lot of the same things. So some of the concerns with civil commitment, with having the difference between criminal law and civil law, typically it's one or the other, but with civil commitment it's like a gray area where it's like some parts criminal, some parts civil.
Really?
So you don't have the same protections when you're civilly committed because it falls under civil law. So hearsay is admissible. They say courts in, courts out, because that's how you get committed. That's how you get released. There's not a set time. Again, they consider it treatment. They don't consider it punishment. They predict future dangerousness by using whatever assessments that they decide to use. Every state has different ones that they go by. And they're considered mentally ill. In Minnesota, it's like a mental abnormality is how the statute is written. So it's very, very broad. And with allocating resources, Minnesota spends a lot of money on MSOP. The budget for this year is $121 million. That's $487 per client per day. And there's funding there in that other graph. That shows federal funding and state funding for MSOP and for other sexual violence primary prevention programs. You can see there's a huge difference in those numbers.
So the tall graph
Minnesota,
is MSOP. What's the short? The little
yep,
tiny short one?
that's Minnesota Sexual Violence Primary Prevention. That's the shorter one. You can see quite a bit of the state funding goes to MSOP instead of prevention. We did used to have a program here in Minnesota called MNCOSA, which was Circles of Support and Accountability. It was 88% effective, And that program doesn't exist anymore because there was a lack of funding.
Because why would we prevent the crime? Much
Right.
more fun to punish the crime.
I'll let Ruby take it away from here. This is more of like the treatment aspects of it, and kind of how that works here in Minnesota.
Okay. Yeah, so like Tiffany said, it's indefinite confinement. It's very subjective criteria, and the evaluations used by the different assessors, a lot of times it's just copy and pasted from the year before. Minnesota, for the Minnesota Sex Offender Program, they get quite a few variances to the Minnesota statute. So by statute, it requires that these individuals be evaluated by psychiatrists, that they're evaluated once a year, that they're evaluated by current criteria. But because MSOP is located in such rural areas, they receive variances. So you only have to be licensed eligible. You don't even have to be licensed by the state in order to conduct these assessments. Along with that, when I worked there as a clinician, I had two different supervisors tell me I had to lower client scores on their quarterly reports because otherwise they look too good and that they would need to move forward. And they would use things like the subjective piece of it is like, let's say somebody took a piece of toast back from Chow Hall that day, they would get written up for stealing state resources. And then that would be written in their assessment saying they're unable to follow rules and regulations.
This sounds totally like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. You ever seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Yep.
Does it feel a little like One Flew Over Cuckoo's Nest to you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. The other thing that MSOP does, and I think there's other civil commitments, I'm just not sure what states also use them, but they use polygraphs throughout the different assessment stages. And then they also use the PPG, which is a machine that hooks up to the guy's genital areas, and it measures responses to different stimuli that they give, whether it's of children or forcible rape, anything like that. They give them these stories and these visuals and to see if they have a reaction. There are other countries that do not allow either one. So we are definitely behind the times in that area. The guys that have taken the PPG, if they do not have any arousal symptoms, they are considered failed. But if they are aroused to the wrong type of stimuli, then they also fail. So it's
so you have to be, wow.
Yep. So it's very subjective to what an individual's, you know, likes and dislikes.
If you dare to have a thought that not everyone else in the room has, then.
Yep. Like I know one of the individuals that's in the Moose Lake facility, his big thing, him and his girlfriend, is her feet. And to MSOP, that is a deviant fetish. Therefore, it counts against him, even though they are both consenting adults.
Wow. That's terrifying.
So in order to get released from civil commitment, the program as designed is about a 3 to 4 year program. If you were to be able to follow it to a T, you know, each quarter meeting, all the matrix scores, everything like that. But obviously nobody ever does. MSOP administration, they love to say it's courts in and courts out because ultimately the court decides, even though it has been shown that if clinical does not back the client in terms of a reduction in custody or release, the courts typically still, they go with whatever clinical goes with. So if clinical says, no, we don't support their release, chances of them beating that are pretty low. MSOP did not have any releases, absolutely none, until 2015, when the Karzgen's case was going on and the civil commitment program was briefly ruled unconstitutional. That's when they started finally putting people into CPS, started putting people on provisional. I think there's 25, Tiffany, that have been fully discharged?
Something like that.
Yeah. In the 30-year program, 25 have been fully discharged, and the majority of them were discharged through their attorneys, not through treatment programming or MSOP itself. A few of them were also juvenile-only offenders, which is what they were able to use to be released. The reduction in custody, so the detainees can apply for CPS, which is Community Preparedness Services. And then there's
Community
provision
preparation.
preparation services, and then there's provisional discharge, where it's essentially it's worse than intensive supervised release from prison. They are on camera almost 24 hours a day. They are on GPS. They have to track every single movement that they do throughout the day. They have to report in with their agents. If they, let's say, they put on their paperwork that they are going from their dorm to AA group at 6 o'clock at night, and they're going to take roads A and B to get there. If they stop anywhere along the way, whether it's to stop to ask for directions or grab a soda, anything like that, they automatically get written up for that because they did not follow the plan. And then once they are put on provisional discharge, they are required to then undergo additional sex offender treatment that is by an accredited company, because MSOP itself is not accredited. Therefore, once you complete their so-called treatment and you are provisionally discharged, you have to do treatment again. And they
This
estimate
time
that's
it's the
at least,
actual treatment.
and then that's considered another 2 to 3 year process. I know a couple individuals that are on PD have said that it's not necessarily sex offender treatment that they're going through. It's basically deinstitutionalizing them from the trauma they endured while being at MSOP for so long, because the majority of them, it's decades. Part of the court process right now is that they go in front of the special review board, who then determines, if they deny or allow them to, the reduction in custody. They don't have any real power. It goes to the commitment appeals panel, and they make the final decision. And then even if the commitment appeals panel says, yes, we approve this person to be provisionally discharged, we feel that they can be relatively safe in the community, MSOP can still appeal it and say, no, we don't agree, which happens the
Does
vast majority
MSOP
of
always win?
them. Almost. There's been a few where they did not, but for the most part, they do.
And in the years that you've been there, how many people have died versus gotten let out?
Over the years, I don't know exactly how many it would have been during the time I was there. I want to say there's probably 30 during from the time I started working there to the work doing now in that time frame. But I think the number now is 110 have died so far.
That number that you just gave us was died. 30 died, and now 140 have died. And how many have gotten out?
It's about 100. I want to say it's like 110 total
I
that
have
we have been able,
107 on my
that we've
list.
been able to keep track of. MSOP no longer announces when an individual passes away. They are now citing that that's a HIPAA violation. So the guys don't know. Families don't know. I know a couple years ago we were fighting for one of the guys who passed away there. He was a veteran. His family was trying, they found out he passed away because the wife received a letter in the mail stating that the benefits have changed because he died, and she had no idea.
To date, there's been 27 full releases. And then from my notes, we have 73 that are on provisional discharge. And this program has been around since 1994. So this year it'll
Without
be
a how many
31
total?
years.
And that's from when they made the SPP and the SDP, so the sexual psychopathic personality and the sexually dangerous person statutes. Before that, it was under the mentally ill statute. So there are a few guys that were in that program prior to the creation of MSOP. So they've been incarcerated after their prison sentence for over 40 years now. The mental health diagnoses, like Tiffany messaged in the statute, it talks about mental abnormality or personality disorder, which is a criteria. Criminal conviction is not required. It can just be a accusation. The misuse of the mental health diagnoses has been condemned by the American Psychiatric Association. In particular, the paraphilic not otherwise specified disorder, antisocial personality disorder, and then MSOP really likes to use paraphilic disorder, not otherwise specified, non-consent, and non-consent isn't even an option in the DSM to pick as a diagnosis. They don't necessarily reassess people to see if they are no longer at higher risk. Like I said, MSLP, they copy and paste from the year before, and they still use stuff that these individuals were accused of or were convicted of back when they were 12, 13, 14 years old, and it all still sticks. They will not remove the certain diagnoses, regardless of how much they can show that they don't meet the criteria. MSLP does not use the medical model, or call them patients. They call them clients. They used to call them patients, but then MSLP said that patients indicates that they will get better, and they don't expect these guys to get better. It is very easy to be committed because the criteria is so low, but the criteria to be released is beyond the high bar to be released. So MSLP captures way too many, and there's not a way to release them, which is why we're inching up towards the 800 mark in the little state of Minnesota. Tiffany, is this still me? Okay. Some of the human rights concerns that go on within the facility is there's the excessive use of force. They have what's called the A team. So whenever there's an incident that goes on, they're the ones that respond. They use mace, they use solitary confinement, they use restraints. If two clients get into a fight and one of them is defending himself, he will still get in trouble. He will still end up going to the high security area. They will still both get written up. There is beyond inadequate medical care. I know both Tiffany and I have worked on quite a few different cases where the individuals are not receiving the medical care that they need. Half of them, I mean, they are near death, and MSLP still says, drink water and sleep more. They do not prevent or address any kind of harassment that comes from the other clients and or staff. I know when I worked there, staff that, they hate the population. They're there to collect a paycheck. And they would say, like, we don't care. A bullet would be cheaper, but we get a paycheck. We're glorified babysitters. We don't care. There's a big issue right now with censorship of free speech. The guys inside, they're not allowed to say, like, they can't say End MSOP Coalition. They'll get written up. They can't print anything that says End MSOP Coalition. We can't send anything in the mail. It gets returned as contraband. And now they've gone so far as anything negative that is said or written about MSOP or the treatment program is deemed contraband, and it is called because it's creating an untherapeutic environment. So they have had a few cases now where different news articles about MSOP have been deemed contraband, that they can't get those in. So it's really going above and beyond limiting their free speech. They've also limited their ability to assemble peacefully and protest. If they do that, they get written up for, inciting a riot or some crazy thing. I can't even remember what it's under. And then there's the lack of privacy. There's shared living areas in Moose Lake. Most everybody is double bunked. They're subject to strip searches. And then they really do. They have inadequate help in general for legal representation, education, rehabilitation. The list is just enormous of the violations that occur in this facility. And it's almost scary to think about too, when you read about other states and their civil commitment. You could almost just swap out the name of the states and it's the same through and through. It's like they created this money machine and they're able to just use it nonstop for decades.
Yeah, and they get way more money than a regular prison, right? Like 130 versus 440. I think it's a lot more.
It's like 3 to 5 times the rate of, or the cost of prison.
And don't they also get less therapy, like less hours of therapy?
Yes.
Th
As of
than they
right
did when
now,
they were in prison, when it cost a third that or a fifth that much, they were getting more therapy than they get when they're in the civil commitment. Yeah.
Right now in Moose Lake, they are only getting 1 hour per week of treatment. And they're citing because there is lack of staff. So they don't have psychoeducational modules. They don't have additional group times. And one of the variations that MSOP has in terms of clinicians meeting with their clients, they only have to meet with them up to 1 hour per month.
Wow.
And I know they also have been, so like for the vocational time, so like their work, they count that as treatment time. And same with like recreation. They're like forced to do recreation activities. Like they don't have a choice, otherwise they'll get in trouble for skipping therapy.
Oh wow. I was going to say, how do they spend the money if they're not getting any therapy? Like how do you justify it being five times more expensive if you're not ever supposed to help the people? That's just pretend.
The other thing that MSOP does, which I still don't quite understand how they do this or how I wish I understood accounting better, but MSOP receives this $121 million a year. Almost 90 some million of that is salaries alone for staff. And then the clients that do work and have a job, they only receive half of their paycheck each paycheck. The other half is given back to MSOP, and it's classified what's called their cost of care. So
Yeah,
even though MSOP receives all this money, they also charge the clients half for their cost
yeah.
of care.
Thaisa said that her guys, if they made more than I think $121 a month, they had to pay the extra to their organization, to the group, to the whatever you call that thing.
Minnesota used to be if they were receiving general assistance and they had a job, if they went over too far, then their GA would reduce. But within the last, I want to say, year and a half or so, there was a court case that went through and they ruled that they cannot do that. So now they get their full GA and then their half a paycheck.
Wow.
When it comes to the excessive use of force, there was recently an 80-year-old client that was maced. He is elderly and has dementia. He uses a walker, and he apparently got combative with the staff. So they ended up macing him, which just blew our minds.
How do you even find out about this stuff, Tiffany?
The guys will call and tell us, or they'll ask,
Okay.
they'll call and they'll say, we just got this guy, that this just happened to this guy. Can you help out with getting him,
Yeah.
some kind of advocacy, stuff
Yeah.
like that. Let's see here. The reliance is on punishment versus therapy. But with MSOP, that is how they've gotten away with is what they have for so long, is that they say that they're providing treatment, and that it's not punishment. But policy changes typically will impact all detainees. So if one person does something that they don't agree with or is against the rules, they will change the entire policy to affect everyone. They will, there's the inflation of rule violations. Like I said, like when you read it on paper, it'll say like disorderly conduct, stealing state resources, failure to comply, which all sound like these might be some pretty serious things that have happened. And it's very minor things that have happened of, like I said, they might take food from the chow hall, or they're exchanging food with a peer, or a staff might say, hey, you guys need to move out of this area. And if they don't move fast enough, it's failure to comply, stuff like that. So the way they're written, it's very much, it makes the sound like they're just breaking all these rules left and right. But they're, when you really dig into it, it's these minor infractions that, for the most part, I don't understand how they even fall under the safety and security of the facility, but that's how they get away
Well,
with a lot of it.
it's like their version of parole, a way to
Yep.
make us watch you a little harder and make things a little harder and make it a little more likely that you're going to fail.
There's the deliberate omission of any pro-social behavior. So even when the detainees in there are doing well and they're helping out their peers and they're volunteering stuff, very rarely does that get written into incident reports or the comm logs to show, like, this individual is showing, pro-social behaviors, this person is showing problem solving. They focus more on the punishment side. They also use the treatment phases and the tier levels as punishment. They can take that, especially the tiers, they can take away at any time. They really like to use that to, as individuals are getting closer to progressing, well, they'll say, like, if you don't do A, B, and C, we're not going to support you for CPS. Or if you don't drop these people as your support because we don't think they're positive, we're not going to support you for provisional, stuff like that. And then, like we talked about, administration calls so many things countertherapeutic or contraband. That have anything to do with speaking out against MSOP, speaking out against the administration. They're doubling down their efforts to try to make sure that no negativity comes against them, as much as possible. And then this one shows the length of time in years at MSOP, back in 2023 when we received the information from them. MSOP states that their administration believes that their policies will always trump state statutes. So even when we point out that their policies go against a statute, they say it doesn't matter, their policies trump a statute. We talked about the permanent variances that work around the different statutes. They're not an accredited program and it's not peer reviewed. So the matrix scoring that they use for the quarterlies and their annuals, stuff like that, none of that is designed by MSOP itself. It is not peer reviewed. It has not been, empirically, there's no empirical data to back up how effective it is. And this is the one that really just kind of blows my mind, is that there's over 100 individuals that are over the age of 65. And Moose Lake has Unit Beta, which is their geriatric unit. So that unit ha is it, you walk it, it's like a nursing home, only it's secure. They can't come and go as they please. But they're in wheelchairs, they're in walkers, they're on oxygen, they're blind. They can't barely they can't function, they can't do their daily living thing. They're struggling a lot. Every once in a while, they will send somebody to the forensic nursing home, depending on how their health gets, if their health gets too bad. But then the forensic nursing home nurses them back to health, gets them stabilized, and then they get shipped right back to Moose Lake. And then this shows that 30 states do not have civil commitment programs. Pretty much across the board, there's a few stragglers, but for the most part, that's similar rates of sexual violence throughout the states. So civil commitment does not prevent sexual violence, especially when you think of the money that is being spent that could be spent on actual preventative programs. And then we talked a little bit about just the moral panic. Like in Minnesota, we had a very high profile case that then the numbers really jumped through the roof because there was the panic. Stranger danger was one of the worst things that could have been promoted, because as we now know, almost around 80% of sexual violence victims are known, like their perpetrators are known to them. And it's estimated that MSOP reduces only 0.35% of sexual violence in Minnesota. And most of the convictions in Minnesota are first-time offenders. So having this civil commitment program is having no real discernible impact on preventing sexual violence whatsoever.
Wow.
This is staff and administration, the institutional abuses. So the individual that's on here, she was one of the psychologists that was doing assessments for the individuals in Moose Lake. She was charged with multiple counts of criminal sexual conduct for having sex with the clients in the facility. Her case ended up being dropped after a couple of years of several delays, due to one of the witness biggest star witnesses. She passed away. So the DA didn't think that they would be able to move forward successfully, so she got to walk. And it's not unusual for MSOP staff to cover up sexual misconduct. They cover up abuse of authority. One of the individuals that we've been talking to, she is a previous security counselor that used to work at Moose Lake, and she said people from the A team, like they will tell new staff, like, you better go out with me, you better come have drinks at my house, or if something happens, I might be a little bit too slow to come help you, or if you don't do A, B, and C, we're going to tell your boss that you're a client hugger and we'll get you fired. And then there is
Yeah, because
a
you're not allowed
lot,
to hug,
correct.
right? Isn't that true
And
that they're
then,
not allowed to hug? You're not allowed to hug them?
correct.
Like, who doesn't think hugs are good for us? Like, since when are hugs bad for you?
You'll even get in trouble for doing a fist bump, depending on the staff that sees it, because there is to be no contact.
Because that makes people healthy.
The other big issue, especially in Moose Lake that I know of, I guess I can't speak for St. Peter, but the corruption and the smuggling of contraband into the facility is just out of control. These guys up there can get anything they want. They can get heroin, they can get meth, they can get pot, they can get alcohol, they get porn, they get whatever they want. They get cell phones. I think when I left, cell phones were going for 5,000 if you brought in a cell phone for a client, it'd be about 5 grand. They'd bring in needles. They bring in so much. The biggest one, or not the biggest one, but the latest one was a staff brought in essentially a whole case of vapes and gummies, and it was just rampant through the facility. And MSOP, what do? They toss all the client cells, try to find out who has it all, but not once did they check any staff member whatsoever.
Right.
There's also the racial and sexual biases that occur within the facilities. Black people are 2 times overrepresented. Native and LGBTQ are up to 5 times overrepresented. I wish I knew the actual number now. I know there it's more than it's greater than 24 for sure. Transgender women within what is considered a male-only facility. I know in Moose Lake, it is very much they're not allowed to wear makeup. They're not allowed in order to get bras, underwear, like any type of women undergarments. They have to go through a whole process to even get the simplest things approved. Yeah, they're in the facility with, no real protections. One of the assessments, they ask about if any of the victims were of the same sex, and you get a higher score for being a higher risk offender if any victims were the same sex as you were. So even though that has been shown to be inadequate and not representative of that group of individuals, they still use the same assessments regardless of how outdated they are.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Static 99 and how there's like, there's only 10 questions, and one of the 10 questions is basically, are you gay? And you get points, which are bad if you say yes. And then like, if you haven't lived with another person, are you allowed to live with a man though? Like, are you allowed to live with someone of the same sex? I can't remember, but basically, if you're too young to be married and if you're gay, well, you already got 2 of the 10.
And I think 4 or higher is high risk or high level.
Some of the other problems that we face with MSOP is the family impact and the challenges with reintegration. Just the stigmatization in general and vigilante justice limits your support systems. Even my family has gotten threats just knowing that my brother is there. Like, that's not right. And then, that makes people not want to speak out. I know it kind of made me a little wary of being in public and speaking about these things, but I've overcome that with being with such a great group of people. So, also with employment and transportation, for when they're reintegrating, that becomes very difficult because they are required to disclose their crimes and the fact that they had a sexual offense. So they lose some job prospects too. Even for people out on provisional discharge, even their agent might just say, "Oh, I don't want you to work there," and that loses an opportunity for them too.
I have a guy who calls me on the 800 line sometimes, and his PO won't let it. First, he had a job working at a theater. He was great. Everybody loved him. It was a great job. But because children sometimes go to the theater, the PO was like, nope, can't do that anymore. And then next thing he knows, he can't do, I mean, basically just every job if he finally gets someone to give him a job, the PO says no. Sounds like how they do
That's
it in
terrible.
this place.
We already kind of mentioned the mental health impact and trauma. So both with the families not having their loved one and for the person that's in MSOP, it's traumatic for them too, being there for so long. There's a lack of reintegration and deinstitutionalization. Like I said before, like they count work as therapy. They don't have a lot of opportunities to reintegrate, even at community preparation services. It sounds nice and it sounds like they do things, but they really don't. It's just an extension of the rest of MSOP. Their like bans on technology and internet makes it really hard for people when they do get out, because they don't have any experience with that. Technology has changed a lot since 1994. So that makes it hard for them too, especially with looking for jobs. Like, doing applications online, having a resume, those things are hard. And
Yeah, and
then
they
the
could be teaching
requirements
the
with
people
registry.
that. Yeah, they could be spending the money teaching them things, but that's not as much fun as torturing them.
At Community Preparation Services, they do have cell phone access for some of the clients, but out of 140 of them there, only like three or four are able to use the cell phone. And what they do is they check it out across from a staff room and they get to call and text on it for a half hour and then they give it back. So it's a little ridiculous. So, I mean, they are getting some of the experience and seeing it, but it should be more available to all of them, especially when they're at the community preparation service stage, but it's not. And we know from other studies too that what survivors of sexual violence want is support and prevention. And by doing so, we would reduce the need for any program like MSOP. Survivors want accountability, rehabilitation, mental health treatment, drug treatment, community supervision, community service, restorative or transformative justice. So they're not looking for punishment. And then this slide is about all of the agencies who have tried and failed to change this program. The governor, state and federal courts, Department of Corrections, the legislative auditor, they've all done studies or tried to get things changed. Of course, this year we are trying to bring forward legislation to get things to change. That's always an ongoing battle and trying to improve things for the people that live there. Hopefully, get people released because, like Ruby said, they're holding way too many people for way too long and they need to have a chance out in the real world.
Yeah.
And we kind of touched on this too. There are alternatives to civil commitment. We already have the Department of Corrections that handles crimes, getting actually reintegrated into the community. The security hospital is available for people who are dangerous to themselves or others. The elderly population could be taken care of in nursing homes where they could receive the proper care. There are some family members who would be willing to house the people coming out, that would provide them housing, for cheap or for free, give them social support and to be able to hold them accountable. That MNCOSA, Circles of Support and Accountability, programs like that are super effective in prevention. We need to invest in those. Prevent violence from occurring by breaking the cycles and changing the culture. Focus more on healing and restoration for all parties involved. And then we've got just some contact information on here for our End MSOP Coalition, Ocean, Dan Wilson, and Russell Hatton. Those are the guys that started the movement inside MSOP. So they did a lot of work from within the walls. That's actually how we out here all got connected, was Daniel reaching out and putting us all in touch. So they've done a lot of
Nice.
work from the inside out. And then the
Nice.
Titus nonprofit, we have a mailing address and a Gmail as well.
And Daniel Wilson, he's one of them that co-founded Ocean with Russell, and he is currently in Rush City Prison. They revoked him on a parole violation for not attending treatment at MSOP because he was speaking out against MSOP's treatment program. So his clinical team said he was unamenable to treatment and they revoked him back to prison for 6 months.
And I mean, I've heard people say prison was not as bad.
There are some that say they would prefer to go back to prison because they actually have more rights and more access to technology like tablets and texting their family, emailing their family, and that kind of thing. Unfortunately, Dan is in Rush City, so he is locked in 22 hours a day.
Wow. Yeah, I had never heard of this before, maybe a year ago, I think at the NARSOL conference. I didn't even know this was a thing. And then they had guys like from inside talking to us through the speaker. It was like a guy who'd been there since he was a kid. How do they already think you're terrible when you're a kid? Like, wow. So Galen, you've got a lot of things that you've been saying here. You want to say any of them out loud? Or are you going to make me read all your comments just one at a time?
Oh, I was gonna say I couldn't come off of mute. I don't have anything specific. I mean, if you want me to talk about anything, I'm happy to talk about it. I just was weighing in as they came up. I guess the one point that I would slightly amend, and this is like a really big idea, is that the people that they're targeting under these systems, which I call shadow prisons, are not mentally ill. And the state doesn't think that they're mentally ill. They don't try to claim that they're mentally ill. And the psychiatric profession also says that they're not mentally ill. And this is a big idea for me because it's the difference between a remotely legitimate civil confinement scheme, a involuntary psychiatric commitment regime that follows the medical model of civil commitment, according to the American Psychiatric Association, and what they're doing at Moose Lake and St. Peter and the other 19 jurisdictions that use these laws right now. There are 21 jurisdictions total. New Hampshire has stopped using their law, interestingly. They've only ever used it to commit a couple of people, and then those people have been released or have died. It's not clear, but they're not holding anyone right now. So now we're down to 20 jurisdictions. The goal of these systems is just to lock people up indefinitely after their release date. And so they've invented this new idea of mental abnormality, which was key in the Supreme Court case, Kansas v. Hendricks. It's not a psychiatric term. It's not a medical term. It's not recognized by the helping trades. It's a legal concept that is built just to control this population who's already past the release date. Like, the goal here was to get around the constitutional protection against double jeopardy. And so how do you do that? Well, you pretend that you're treating people. And well, how do you target the people? Well, we're going to pretend that there's just like something mentally wrong with them. But it's not, I mean, Tiffany and Ruby did a great job walking through the idea that the diagnoses that are used in these schemes are predominantly not recognized by the American Psychiatric Association. They're not in the
Like
DSM.
the paraphilia, they act like paraphilia is a real thing. And it's like attraction to teenagers. We all started getting attracted to people while we were teenagers. Being attracted to teenagers isn't mentally wrong. It's
Well,
not a real
the
thing.
non-consent qualifier, which I forget whether it was Tiffany or Ruby talking about this, but that's like one of the most egregious. And then the other one, of course, is the hebephilia designator, which in some states they've just collapsed that to adolescence. So that they're not even really, anyway, the idea that any of this is legitimately about psychology, is laughable. This is just the state coming up with an excuse to indefinitely detain people. Anyway, but I'll get off my soapbox. Obviously, I've spent a lot of time thinking about this, and you know, we talked about Dan Wilson. I just want to lift him up a little bit for a second. Like, to be clear, my understanding of the situation, and we're going to come out with an article soon about what's going on with him, is that they literally kicked him out of the shadow prison for speaking out against the shadow prison, which seems to violate all kinds of First Amendment issues. And for some reason, like, none of the people who care about the First Amendment are paying attention to this or seem to care about this. But this has to have delivered a really, really chilling message to all of the other shadow prisoners. Because they take you out of, you know, what is already an awful, awful environment, the shadow prison. It's a gulag, right? And then, but they put you at Rush City, which of course is like a gang-infested, very violent place. And like, folks, let's be clear, there's a threat there. Like, the facility is saying, oh, you want to talk some shit? Fine, we'll just like send you someplace where you're going to get stabbed. And that's exactly what happened to Dan. Fortunately, he seems to be okay, but that's insane. And the people that pretend to do this are treatment providers. It's the epitome of evil. And I guess the last pitch that I will offer here is that we have to care about the most marginalized people in our society, because this is the thing that anchors us to mass incarceration. As long as it's okay to permanently define some people based on the crime of conviction, it's okay to do that to everybody. Like, the debate about who are the good offenders and who the bad offenders are, that's a debate that we always lose, right? That line the other side controls. So the question has to be, is it okay to permanently control people or define somebody based on having violated a law? And the rest of the civilized world has answered that question and said no. The United States is exceptional in its unwillingness to recognize basic ideas about who we are as human beings, that all of us grow and learn and change. Like that is the universal element of being human. So even if you're just on the registry, or you have a loved one who's only on the registry, or only going to be on the registry if they're in prison right now, you have to care about this issue because they could do this to your kid too, or they could have done this to you if you're personally impacted. And it keeps pulling us to this idea that, some people are so dangerous, and it's just bullshit. Again, there are 30 states that don't do this. They don't have higher rates of recidivism. They don't have higher rates of sexual violence. So what are these facilities that supposedly just pull out recidivists and indefinitely detain them for future crime? What are they actually accomplishing if they're not actually preventing any crime?
Spending a lot of money.
Waste a lot of money.
Yeah,
Oh,
so
I'd love
true.
to connect with Ruby and Tiffany though at some point if you could connect to Sam.
100%. Yep, I will have. I'd be happy to do that.
Awesome.
Yeah. The fact that most people don't even know this exists, and it exists in so many places and affects so many people. It's just part of this whole culture of making you scared about being related to the registry and making people. We just have a tendency to just like cocoon. Just stay in our little space with the three people who didn't dump us, and we just kind of quietly sit in the corner and we don't talk to each other about this. And it really makes it easier for the haters to attack us if we are all just being afraid all the time. And I think this is the premise behind the like I know that there are people out there who realize this is bullshit because it's gotten so wide, the CP charges have gotten out of control, and the net nanny nonsense, and I mean they're like losing their minds, and so there are so many people now being affected that it's got to topple at some point, and I think we've got to stand together and just start having these conversations. I don't think we're going to convince politicians to do this for us because, I mean, the politicians can't do anything. Like, they can't even keep the government open. They're not going to change this for us. And I think, while we occasionally have wins in court, we also have losses in court. For every, okay, fine, you don't have to put up the sign in Missouri, there's a, but we're going to chemically castrate you in Louisiana. So I think the way forward is that we've got to start changing people's minds about it in the same way that we change their minds about just LGBTQ hatred, right? That has mostly disappeared. People are, I mean, I'm exaggerating, but it's better. It's way better than it used to be. And same thing with the war on drugs. Back in the 80s, we let Nancy Reagan convince us that drugs were like the devil. And now it's like weed's legal all over the place. And, my state is considering letting psychedelic mushrooms be legal. We're lobbying for that. So it's possible to change people's minds over time. But I think we're going to have to just brave it up and start really having these conversations. Everywhere I go, like I have a pretty wide friend group. All my friends know that I'm on the board of war. All of our friends know about Greg's conviction. And I just bring up, when I see bullshit out in the world, I bring it up. If I see like, oh, you better watch out, you could be put on the registry for that, because people do stuff all the time that could be, you could get in trouble for. And honestly, I think that's our goal is we've got to start being honest and sharing with people. Like, I'm embarrassed that I didn't know half this stuff. I raised teenagers. How did I miss this? Like, someone should be telling you this, all the ways that you can get in trouble. And oh, I was going to ask this question. So, what is the answer to like, where should the money be going? If we could save this bajillion dollars of money that they're spending on civil commitment in 20 states, what's the like most effective way to spend that money for prevention? Any of you brilliant people can answer that. Emmy has a question. I think I unmuted you. Why can't we hear her?
you.
I can't hear her again.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Now we can hear you.
I just wanted to ask, who runs these like this MSOP?
The state does. Here in Minnesota, it's the Department of Human Services. This year, that's actually changing to a different department called Direct Care and Treatment. So different states have different people in charge of them. Like some, the Department of Corrections runs them. Others, it would be like Department of Human Services.
So it's a state run. So I don't understand, if it's state run, how come nobody complains about the treatment?
If
I
they
think that
complain
they're.
about the treatment, they just get, if you say anything crabby, they just knock you back in the program and they flunk you. Like Thaisa talked last time about they'd take the guys out on like a Walmart run to like, go and pretend to be regular people for a minute. And when you were out on your Walmart run, someone would be following you around. And if, let's say you're in an aisle and you're like picking out what kind of chips to buy. If a kid gets close to you and you don't notice and like immediately exit the room, you would get dinged for that.
Okay,
They
but
just.
that's not the point. The point I'm trying to make is it's just too far-fetched. How does the state run an organization like that? And just the things that you just mentioned is like somebody's got to do something about it. Like if that happened, for instance, if another organization, okay, let's just say Social Security. If I felt like I was being cheated somehow, there's somebody higher or higher or higher. How can that have never happened in all these years? How come
Well,
an
I
attorney
think.
didn't come and say, like, hey, look what's going on over here? I don't understand that.
I think the biggest thing, especially in Minnesota, is so first, it's the population, right? These are individuals that, for the most part, the public believes have all been convicted of some horrific sexual offense, which is not the case in the majority of the cases. However, that's what's portrayed to the
Were.
public.
No, let's just
But,
say they were.
right. But so here's what
Somebody
happens
said.
in Minnesota. So in Minnesota, we have the clinical directors, the facility directors, and then you have the program director, and then you have Nancy Johnston, who is the executive director of all of MSOP. Her boss is the commissioner for Department of Human Services. Nancy Johnston is the spokesperson for MSOP. So when she goes in front of legislators, or she goes in front of the commissioner, she goes in front of the governor, you will hear her talk about how they are treating the worst of the worst. And if it wasn't for them, Minnesota would be the most unsafe state ever. Like, she very much fear mongers to the point that everybody else says, okay, well, these guys that are complaining and saying that the treatment is horrible, that they're not getting health care, that they're not getting therapy, they must be lying because they're the worst of the worst. So they're just manipulating and they're just trying to find a way out. And whatever they're
Yeah.
saying is not true.
I'm
So they've
sorry.
been
That's the first
investigated
thing.
before.
There's no way. What's the population in that of the clients in there?
Between the two sites, it's like 740 some, I think.
740. And what's the population of the staff?
Oh, that's in the hundreds as well. I mean, that's, I don't even know how many there are.
Like 200, 300?
No, I would say there's got to be more because there's more per, I mean, you've
So
got.
half of the clients, there's at least half of what the clients is also the staff. So if there's 700 clients, there's like over 300 staff. And with all that staff, nobody notices anything that's so weird.
Oh no, they notice. They know it goes on. They perpetrate it. They follow it. They do it. They break the rules. They break the
If
law. They don't care.
you enter one of these facilities and you're the kind of person who's going to get pissed about it, they fire you.
Yep, exactly.
So they haven't
So
figured
it's
anybody
like
up.
Nurse Ratched and a bunch of Nurse Ratched wannabes all in the same space. And if you're not Nurse Ratched, get out of here. We don't want you,
Okay,
we don't want you in here.
but I'm sorry. It just seems to me that somebody above this woman and above the commissioner and above, if all these people had families that complain, like there's something wrong with this. And it's, I just don't think people are complaining enough.
Well,
How can these
if I
people get
could,
this
Emily,
in
if I could
front of
weigh
an
in on that
attorney?
concept, I think you're right. Ultimately, these things are going to change when enough people with political standing, so people who can vote, people who are not system impacted, whose voices can be uplifted, when enough people get together and say that they're not willing to tolerate this from their elected officials and demand change,
And you have to
things will
get to the
change.
further up higher and higher. I mean, I'm sorry. My son was supposed to get out, and his caseworker, I just think he was stupid. I don't think he did it on purpose, but he screwed up he didn't send in the right way the stuff that he was supposed to send in. I can't remember exactly how it was right now. I couldn't take it anymore. I finally had to call up the BOP regional, find out information about what this section is. It's in Kansas City. I've called up so many times. They were kind of rude to me a little bit, but I kept calling up until one person said, "Well, let me check it out." And then we found out the guy was sending something in, but not completely. So then my son was in there for an extra 2 months that he could have been in the halfway house. What I'm saying is that it's just too far-fetched what's going over there. What's going on over there? It's the first time I heard about it when we were at that the conference.
So, Emmy, do you think that it isn't happening? I mean, do you think these people are making it up or what?
I think people, like, knock on wood, I'm glad my son is not there, and I feel bad for anybody's family that's there, but I would be on top of it every freaking day with every freaking person I can talk to, like starting from the bottom and finding out who all the way to the top, past the woman that's in charge of that department. There's got to be somebody in the state that oversees other departments. There's got to be something like that.
Well, I mean, these guys have had a hunger strike, and I've communicated with Tiffany about the list of demands that they asked for. Like, we're on a hunger strike until you give us these five things. And there were five things on the list, and it's been like 4 or 5 years. Nothing's changed.
Yep, there's no accountability. And
Can
for
all the
current,
people hire attorneys that will fight for them?
a lot of families don't have the money.
I'm sorry. I think all the families, even if they put like a tiny bit together, could get enough money. We're talking 700 inmates that have already served their time, right? This is after they serve their time. Isn't that what civil commitment is?
Yep.
I'm sorry. They're
Sometimes we have there's people in both Minnesota and Illinois who have no crimes. They never serve prison time because they simply went to their therapist and said to their therapist, "Hey, I'm having these like weird attractions to my fill in the blank year old fill in the blank. Can you help me not act on these things?" And the therapist ends up getting them civilly committed. They didn't even have to touch it.
And can't the
Yep.
therapist get sued by a really good lawyer for talking about what he talked about with a patient?
No, they're
I
actually
think
required to by law
it's a,
in
they're
most
called
states.
mandated
Mandatory
mandated
reporters.
reporters.
Yeah.
That's bullshit too.
There's actually a
Can't
case
believe they get
in
away with that. All these years they
there's.
get away with being saying all the private things that they heard. I'm sorry. Unless somebody said they were going to kill somebody, which I think then a therapist has to say something about it. I don't know. I just think we're just not doing enough.
Well, there's groups. There's a End Civil Commitment in New York. There's End MSOP in Minnesota. Galen's whole shtick. I mean, this is his main, right? This is like
This is
your
my
main
main thing.
jam. Just Future. That's all they do. So, like, I know it seems like, oh, well, this has got to be easy.
No,
But
I know it's not easy. Believe me, half of my life, all I do is bitch about people that are in the government in different departments. Right now, I'm fighting with my county about my taxes. I'm not going to let go until they do something about it. I'm just going to keep on top of it and talk to whoever I can above the next person until I find, because when I know I'm right. Now, if I'm wrong, that's different. But when you know that you're right, we're not just saying, "Oh, we just want to change the rule." No, this is mistreatment that we're talking about. I'm
Yeah.
sorry, but we have to do more. That's just no.
Well, I'm sure you could join either one of these committees because I think you've got some ideas they haven't heard.
No, I just feel like it's not even the ideas. I just feel like the people that have the family members in there, because nobody else is going to listen to anybody. Except for the person that's affected. You know what I mean? Like you have a brother, you said, right? You have to just keep calling, like everything that your brother tells you goes on in there and how he's treated, because you can't really talk for other people. You know what I'm saying? They
Yeah,
got you down.
Ruby is saying a lot of the family detainees are afraid to speak out because then their loved one gets punished in the facility by staff. I've certainly heard that. I mean, yeah, and like when Thaisa talked about when she first started working at Larned, right away, the first thing that the other employees said was, "Oh, they're the worst of the worst. They lie. Don't take word. Don't believe a single word they say. They're so manipulative." And she gets in there and she's like, "Well, these are just normal people who need some help, and I'm here to give them some help." And so she was just, she believed in their humanity and she communicated with them with kindness and compassion. And right away, the guys were like, "Oh, you are not gonna last. They're gonna fire you so hard. Start writing stuff down. Write down every time they talk to you and start writing stuff. Keep good notes." And she did. And sure enough, at month five, they started telling her that she couldn't come to work because she didn't have the right kind of mask to protect her from COVID. So she went to the hospital and got a perfectly good mask,
I
better than
remember
that.
talking about that. Yeah.
They'll just find a way. They have all the control, and they're so mean and they're just evil that.
Only other way would be like all the people that work there to report them.
Well, they try. And what do they do when she tried to report them? She does. She goes to the legislatures in Kansas and communicates about this. She's got a YouTube show. She's gone on. She's published. I just put a link to her article up way up at the top. There's a link to this article that Thaisa had in Harper Magazine. Anyway, when you leave and you try to like speak up, they try to take away your licensure. They act like you're the bad guy, and they really make it just very hard for people to be honest
Yes,
or to stand up.
oh my God.
It's very like you read it out of a book. All right, Beverly. Yes, you're right. Beverly has her hands up.
Yeah, well, I understand what Emmy is saying, and I feel that too. You know, why don't people stand up more? And they do need to do that. If you have over 700 people in a facility, they represent over 700 families. So it almost seems like you need to have you do need to have a collective of these families who are willing to say something. So someone, you know, who has the resources and to want to do it needs to contact all of these families and say, we need to be a collective to say
Exactly.
something about this. And then that collective needs to have a megaphone, say like a news source to get the word out, someone who is willing to interview family members and interview old staff who have seen things, and then they need to get that together, and then they need to put it out. That takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of energy. It takes a vision of, you know, maybe a person or a couple of people. And so I think that's what is missing, because in a state the size of Minnesota, and you have these 700 families, they're scattered everywhere. And some of them may not want to speak up. Some of them may think that their loved one is the worst of the worst. Who knows? So it just makes me wonder what could happen is that the family members just need to get together so that they can
Tell me if there's a refrigerator.
no, it's okay. So that family members can get together and speak up and be more vocal and get their strength from each other and
Well, and
realize that they have a voice.
ditto, we need to do that as a movement.
Exactly. And
We
that's
need to also
and
do that as a movement.
yes, and that's what
And they make it really hard on us.
like last time that we met as a group, Joey was on and he was saying, use your voice in whatever way you can. Just use your voice. And now that my son has been convicted and sentenced, and he's in prison now. He was pre-trial, now he's in prison, and he's going to have to serve his time and then be on the registry. Now I have a voice
That's
of
right.
what I can say that happened to us, that happened to him, and is going to happen to him, because he's not going to have a happy time.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm hoping that he does get into a minimum security prison, and he does have something there.
When does
that
he actually go in, Beverly? When do they actually take him?
To the prison?
Uh-huh. He's already there?
No, he's in a county jail right now.
Okay.
So, and then he has to go to a diagnostic center, which I've heard is horrible, because that's where they do executions. And that's where they do have the most violent offenders.
Yeah. You're in Illinois, right?
Huh? Yeah.
Illinois.
And it's, but I'm in Illinois, but he's in Georgia. And
oh,
so
yeah.
this is in Jackson, Georgia, that this diagnostic facility is. And we were looking it up online last night, and it's just, you know, they have really violent offenders there that they're assessing to put into other prisons to decide where they go. So the reason why he's there, going to be going there, is because he's a sex offender, and according to them. And he's a danger to society. So he needs to be assessed and determine where to go. And they know that sex offenders are likely victims in prisons.
Yep.
So they have to separate them. So they send them to the, hopefully to the minimum security. That's what I'm hoping for him. But anyway, that we all need to be a collective.
We do. We need to help each other, and we need to support each other, and we need to quit hiding, always hiding. We need to start calling out.
And
you know,
and
you're not going to change. You're not going to change the fours and the threes and the fours, the ones that are like spending all day on a hate site, typing mean things about pedophiles. We're not going to change those people's minds. Those people probably are going to vote against us regardless. But there are people who are a lot closer to us that we really need to start talking to. The people who are all cops are bastards. The people who are like, oh, hey, the war on drugs is bullshit. People who are, you know, people who are changing their minds about all the things that we need to be changing our minds about, need to start really paying attention. You know, we need to start talking to those people.
So I feel Emmy's energy, but it's really hard to channel that energy, in my opinion. Thanks.
Well, and just because of the way this kind of a charge separates you from all the people that used to be your supporters.
Yeah.
It makes it so that, like, it might take you 5 years to like find people that support and love you anyway. You know, if you're scared, and if you're hiding, and if people around you are being shitty, it's really hard to maintain, especially because you're paying more bills. You've got, you know, somebody's not home to help you pay the bills. You got to pay for two different houses because the government won't let your kid live at home anymore.
Yeah. Like, if you speak your truth and say, this is what's happening to me, I'm a human too, you know, and I would like my humanity back, please. And thank you.
Well, anyway. And just that, just explaining to people, like, how is this what we're trying to aim for? This idea that you make one mistake and no one will ever love you, and you can't have a job, and, you know, you're going to have to pay all these fees for all this nonsense. I mean,
yeah. And what a
how is this
on
making
society
the world a better
is.
Place? Well, how is
and,
this
and
making the world a better place?
Yeah. And it's such a drain on society. You are telling someone that they can't have a job, that they can't have a place to live. So what are you doing with them? What are you doing with this person? You know, and you're just making it harder and harder and harder. And I mean, it's just, it's mind blowing. Yeah. It's mind blowing.
Yeah.
So anyway, thanks.
Tiffany, I see your hand up. You're unmuted.
Yeah, I was just going to speak to some of that with like the family stuff. Like there are a lot of people there who like their family has disowned them, so like they don't have anybody, but we do reach out to all of them, and we send our info in. We even just sent in like 250 letters, like, hey, tell your family and friends to contact us. But I know that, you know, they're getting other information too from inside. So like from staff saying like we're not a good group or whatever. So like even the former staff that just got with us, she's like, oh, this is not at all what I was expecting. I thought you guys would be scary and like whatever. But that's not what it is at all. And then with like getting on the news, that has been really a struggle in this type of like in this space, I guess. Even like back when they had the hunger strike, we had a rally at the Capitol and everything. We had interviews conducted with a news station. They told us what channel it was going to be on. They told us what time it was going to air. So we had everyone like, hey, make sure you're watching. And nothing ever aired. So it was really weird. But that's not the first time that's happened. But we do try to get in front of people as much as we can, whether it's events like this, or the ocean rallies. We're always trying to get out there and let people know that this is a thing and that it's something that can change.
Yeah, honestly, the idea that I think most people have no idea. They have no idea. And this is so like 1984 thought crime. What is the show where they like try to trap you down and take you away for a crime you're gonna do in the future? There's a anyway, it's terrifying. Okay, so I wanna show everybody how to save this chat because we put some things in there like, oh, watch this movie, get on this, you know, do this, do this, do this. Got a lot of good notes in there. So if you would like to save this chat so that you can later see the names of the movie that you're supposed to watch, go to the chat and there's three dots that says more, and then you say save chat. Thank you so much, Tiffany and Ruby, for hang on, something down here. Oh, unmute you? I'm just gonna unmute you because I don't know what you're saying. Okay, so there's how to reach Ruby. Minority Report. Yep, that's right. Jim has his hand raised. How did I miss that? All right. Well, anyway, I don't know, a bunch of people are leaving or something bad is happening over there. It's a terrifying thing that we have places like this in so many of our states, and that people are just like, you know, not even noticing. So I find it just like a sign of the circling the drain that society's in the middle of. Just the stuff that we're letting happen in our everywhere, just mass incarceration in general. We're incarcerating more people in the United States than like any other state. If you sort us by state, it's ridiculous. It's like I don't even understand why we think this is helping society in any way. Michelle, you're working on this in Iowa? Is that true? I probably know that. Anyway, thank you guys. I guess we're leaving. Love you all. Thank you for all your hard work.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for coming.